Go. What's going on?
What's up, Tom?
Dan, back again for another podcast.
Part two.
I couldn't keep you away.
I know. Part two.
I was supposed to do a podcast yesterday. The person had to cancel. I was sad.
Yeah, she didn't want to talk to you.
Well, and I acted a little bit. Inside, I was having a hissy fit. But on the outside, I was trying to be cordial. But I was still slightly having a hissy fit. Well, because I was like, you know, I look forward to it. And I'm like, okay. Because to do a podcast with somebody is not, you're asking a little bit of them, you know, because it's something new. Everybody's like, oh, my God, I have nothing to talk about. And then we end up talking for an hour. So
I know.
I was looking forward to talking to her. And then when she said she had to cancel, I was like, oh. But I saw her again this morning. I was like, oh, okay. And the reality is she's in the same type of business that I'm in. And this is a slow time of the year.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't pass up on business.
Absolutely not.
So I got it. So what's going on with you?
Not much. Nice day out. Just enjoying the day.
It is beautiful. I was like, oh, it's so nice. I think I'll wash the windows.
It's a little chilly.
15 minutes later, my hands are frozen.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's nice, meaning the sun's out, the skies are clear. We don't get a lot of that.
I am absolutely looking forward to summer.
I just want it over 60 degrees. That's it.
No, I mean, I'm just ready. I'm not, and then all of a sudden, boom, I am.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I get it. I'm excited. Yeah, with soccer starting and now outdoor stuff starting.
Do you have plans this summer?
This summer?
You guys usually go somewhere.
Spring break, we're going to go to Williamsburg and do a little bush garden. And we're staying, I can't remember, there's a resort there. We're actually staying at a resort. Right up from the park. I can't remember the name. But anyways.
I have never been to Williamsburg, but a lot of people say it's pretty awesome.
It is really awesome.
Do you do all the historical stuff?
We'll probably do it this time, depending on the weather. But we'll do a day at the park, a day in Williamsburg. There is some really nice places to eat and drink and just some cool restaurants.
Eating and drinking.
Yeah. What's it? There's a pub. Oh, my God. It's called, like, the Hound Dog or something. The Dog Pub on the corner. It's really cool.
Hair of the Dog Pub.
Something like that. But, yeah, Williamsburg is a cool town. I really like it.
Are you into that history?
Yes and no. I mean, if put in front of me, I always gravitate towards it. I'm not going to seek it out, but, you know.
I always think, you know, if we were, you know, there's a lot of people that are, you know, very patriotic and, you know, make America great. I'm like, well, if you had to pick up a musket halfway through your workday and go fight, would you be down?
Yeah.
And then, you know, not only to be down to fight, but then, you know, get shot with a musket ball and, you know, have your leg cut off and with, you know, the things that those people had to go through, especially if they were injured, was awful.
I just, you know, when you do look at history, and, you know, I'll be the first to say I'm not a historian or did I do really great in history, but the little that we learned, it's amazing what they went through, and it's amazing if a few little things didn't happen the way they happened, how this might still be part of England.
Like it, what?
I mean, just little battles that, you know, you learn Gettysburg or whatever, you know, some of the signs you read in Williamsburg, like, you know, battle took place here. And it's like all these little battles. And, you know, we think of it as the Revolutionary War or all the small wars that took place as a whole. But in those were there all these little battles. And in West Virginia, in Harper's Ferry, there's some battles that took place there. And if a few things went a different way, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so to your point, you know, it's hard for us to relate to what those people went through back then.
The funny thing about all of it, really, is it isn't that long ago.
No.
You know, I think of, like, you know, my world as about 200 years.
Right.
And it's really, I mean, obviously the world's been around a lot longer than that, but and it's funny, you know, our bodies have evolved to this point, and then all of a sudden, life just gets going real fast.
Yeah.
You know, and I was watching something earlier today, and the guy was talking about how our bodies haven't really evolved for the lifestyle that we can have. You know, like, amount of sugar and all these different things that we can get into, where 200, 500 years ago, you know, that stuff wasn't really available,
right,
and didn't affect us like it does today. You know, I was saying maybe in 1,000 years we'll evolve with some new organ that just takes care of sugar and, you know, saturated fats or something like that. You know, a new organ that is...
Anything is possible.
Well, you know what the appendix is for.
I don't have one, so I have no idea. I just know it was painful when it burst and came out.
From what I understand, the appendix is an organ that was used to digest raw meat.
Ah.
So before, you know, fire was around,
right,
you know, we ate all of our meat, I guess, raw. And that's what the appendix was for. But as we've found fire and cooked meat, we don't use it as much. That's why you can take it out. So maybe one day there'll be this sugar organ that's just good for digesting Kit Kats.
Well, hot damn, you learn something every day. I did not know that.
Oh, you came and left with some new knowledge.
I know, knowledge.
You can tell your friends that if you want. You can drop some knowledge on it.
Drop some knowledge from Tom. Okay.
I've been watching, you know, and I talked to you the other day about this.
Well, wait, back to the appendix. Do you have yours still?
No, but I had my gallbladder taken out.
Okay, Michelle does. I had hers taken out too, but...
the gallbladder?
The gallbladder, yeah. She was like 17. But my appendix, yeah, mine...
Did it rupture?
It did as soon as I got to the hospital. Mm. Like, I just made it. And my God, it was painful. I thought I had a stomach bug for like 2 days. I was curled up in a ball. And then finally got to the point where I could barely move. And I finally went to the emergency room.
You know, and you and I both have young kids. Whenever my kids have like stomach pain,
mm-hmm.
one way you can tell, or from what I understand, is if you jump up and down, your appendix will hurt.
Right.
More than if you have a, like, you know, need to use a restroom or... What was that?
I don't know.
Is that your phone? I heard a beep, beep.
Yeah, it was my phone. Oh. Never mind.
Yeah, so if you jump up and down, you know, not super high, but that moving of that organ will create pain where if you have, you know, to use the restroom, that won't be as obvious. Just right. Another little... So if Colin's like, oh, Daddy, my stomach, you go jump up and down. Does it hurt?
I'll try that.
But I've been, you know, and I talked to you about it, I guess earlier in the week, whenever you were here, we talked last, you know, about this new diet that I was doing. I guess it's, I don't even know if it's a diet, just how I eat, a modification on how
yes,
I eat.
Yes, and I talked to Michelle, but she thought it was really odd.
Yeah.
She's like, there's no way he's going all day. And I'm like,
I'm absolutely what? Going all day. And
that's crazy.
When you really think about it, it makes sense, honestly, for me. Okay. I know that, I mean, do you need, I mean, for me, I don't need as much food as I think I need, traditionally, a breakfast, a
right.
lunch.
Right.
At least not at this point, because, you know, I don't want to be like a triathlete where, you're so ripped, but mm-hmm. I've got some fat to burn. I mean, I'm not feeling, and I actually, and I've been doing that, the just supper diet for 3 weeks, and I feel a lot better. I've lost weight. I never weighed myself, and
right.
but I know I feel better.
Right.
And so, of course, when I get into something like this, I've been watching a lot of, you know, different shows, and there's this guy, Dr. Sean Baker, I think his name is, but he is just a, he just eats meat, a carnivore diet.
Wow.
And, you know, you think, oh, geez, all the things we've heard about high cholesterol and all these different... You know, wives' tales about, you know, if we did just this, just meat or no meat or a balanced meal. And I'm watching this guy, and he's everything that, you know, we think is a fact about if we were to do a diet a certain way, he just basically, you know, debunks it. And one of the interesting ones was cholesterol. And, you know, I'm not a doctor, but I'm just regurgitating things I've heard. But,
right.
And you get a physical, I'm sure, every mm-hmm. year. And every year you gotta get your blood work done.
Mm-hmm.
And this year I have my blood work done, and I am the worst at getting my blood work done. I'm sure I'm not the only one because
no, I'm the same way.
There's a fat. You have to fast, and I never can fast. I always snack at night, so I never get the blood work done. And the last physical I had, my doctor said, you know, just snack, do whatever you got to do, but go get the blood work done. So
yeah.
I said fine, and I had it done, and my cholesterol was really low. I had great cholesterol. But this guy was saying that our cholesterol fluctuates throughout the day.
Yeah.
And to have it tested one time after a fast is really not a great sample.
Hmm.
Now, like I said, I'm not a doctor. I'm just, you know, saying what I've heard. But, it made sense that so what he did, his solution was he tested his blood every hour.
Okay.
And he's a doctor, so he was able to have it tested and all this stuff. But he found that all throughout the day, your cholesterol changes.
Hmm.
So, like, if you had you tested it in the morning, it could be completely different than what it was in the evening. So, and he was like, cholesterol isn't as big of a deal as we make it out to be.
Okay. I don't know. But it is funny how the doctors put a lot of stress on your cholesterol level because, that's like one of the main things they bring up during your physical. I probably do my physical, I probably should do it more, but I do it like every 3 or 4 years. And the last physical I had, my cholesterol was fine. This physical, they said it was just, it was high. And mm-hmm. they were like, you need to watch your cholesterol, less salts. I'm like, okay, so I'll watch my cholesterol.
In a way you went.
In a way I went, yeah.
Well, so, I won't go down the cholesterol rabbit hole, but I was, when I start doing something like this, this modification to how I eat, I just start opening my eyes and trying to learn as much as I can about it because, and another thing I was watching, this guy was talking about how we've really lowered our standards for ourselves. Because, maybe you might exercise, maybe I might exercise, but a lot of people don't exercise. And I don't exercise a lot. I don't go to the gym or anything. I run.
You do pretty good.
I run. Yeah. That's my thing.
Yeah.
And that's good. It's good cardio, but, that's about all I do. I could definitely improve. But we've lowered our standards down to really this place where, for the most part, people don't exercise. People don't eat well.
Right.
If you're living a sedentary life, yeah.
Except unless you're on Instagram, then you're,
then you're super happy.
Then super happy, and look at my pictures of me working out.
People say that everyone posts pictures on Instagram, and it shows how happy they are, but I don't necessarily see that.
No, it's just funny.
But do you believe that, it's only just photos of happy people?
Well, for the most part, people post, whether it be Instagram or Facebook, happy occasions or kind of look at me pictures.
Do you ever look at Instagram? And this is not a, obviously I know the answer, but try to think about it. But do you ever look at Instagram and feel bad?
No, never. I think individually every person has to be, is different on how they look at their life. And I think once you get to a point where you're happy with your lot in life or where you're at in life, social media doesn't affect me. I could care less what people post. Whereas I know for a lot of people, it does affect people. But you don't have to look too deep to see that social media affects how people relate to other people or how they feel about themselves. For me, it's not a big deal. I'm happy with where I'm at.
Well, I like Facebook because for me, I like posting pictures of stuff, my kids and my family and my work and
food. You'll see with me. It's just, I love posting pictures of the kids.
Well, and I like, it's almost like a slight documentation of my life, And I look back at it and I find little, my routine usually is I get up in the morning and I turn some coffee on or something. I usually sit with my phone and Christine sits on the couch and we just kind of look at our news feeds, and I usually find some dumb video that I go down some video hole, and I usually find,
stupid cat videos.
No, not cat. It's usually foreigners doing construction, where the giant wall, and he's hitting it with the mallet, and then he takes off, and that's the whole wall falls.
I have no idea, because I don't do that.
But
anyway.
So then I'll find funny stuff, and I'll post that into my news feed. And then, every once in a while, I look back and just laugh and reflect on my news feed. But
yeah,
it's more, staying in touch with family, but also just kind of documenting. And then Facebook has a nice way of bringing up old pictures that you can
see again. Because I use Android and Google Photos, and periodically, like once a week, Google Photos will send you, like, do you remember this?
Right, like, and 3 years ago.
From 3 years ago. And I think, what, Facebook does the same thing?
Yeah, Facebook does it, too.
Which, it's always cool. And I'll always pull those up and go, oh, wow, that was really cool. Yeah, I remember that. But, yes, I mean, for me, I'm kind of the same. You know, I don't use it as much as you do. I probably... I don't post that much, but for me, it's cool because it's just kind of timelines the kids.
My latest thing I've been doing is taking pictures of steaks on Friday.
Steaks on Friday.
Friday steaks. Okay. Steak night.
Steak night. All right.
So you, we talked a bit the other day, just on the phone, but you were talking to me about local music. And like you kind of want to, you said you don't play any music and you don't know how to read music, but you love music.
Yeah.
And then you're kind of like... I want to start looking at local music a little more.
You know, I just think I'm the epitome of that guy that just really has a deep passion for music, but really doesn't have an outlet. And what I mean is I'm not musically talented. I can't sing. I can't play an instrument, although I tried to play a guitar, and that was pretty bad. And probably if I put some effort into it, I could. But I think... You know, it's kind of like the guy that isn't an athlete, but he wants to get involved in sports, so he becomes an agent. Well, it's kind of that's kind of my feeling. Not that I, you know, so yeah, we were talking, and if I had to get involved in music, it would be I really like talking to people that are musicians or artists, and kind of get a better idea of how did they get into that? Was it always a passion? Like, were they kids? So I, you know, those are things, you know, if you watch documentaries or if you watch just one-on-one interviews, the best part of that is, of that piece always for me, is when the interviewer asks the artist what their influences were. How did you get into music? What were your beginnings? And to me, that's always interesting. And so that's kind of the path I was, what we were talking about the other day.
Well, that's, you know, the premise behind the Rehoboth Social app and doing the podcast is really about... you know, shining a light on somebody that's living in Rehoboth or, you know, working in Rehoboth, playing music in Rehoboth.
Yeah.
It's really about just Rehoboth, yeah. Rehoboth Social and the area around it. As I've gotten older, because I'm like you, I love music. I've always loved music,
yeah.
and I played in a band and, you know, was in guitar, and we were, you know, more of a thrash metal band when I was out in Albuquerque, but I loved music, you know, but as I've gotten older and with kids and then getting sober, you know, I don't really spend a lot of time in the local bar seeing local music.
Right.
But when I initially had moved here, there was a lot of great... I was obviously much younger, and I was much more gung-ho into getting into the mix.
Right.
And, you know, Love Seed Mama Jump, first band that always comes to mind. I had some of the best time. In fact, I still see the singer, and I think... Love Seed's still together.
They're still around.
I know Rick does a lot of solo stuff, but
yeah,
I see him every once in a while. I always tell him, you know, thank you. You brought a lot of great memories for me.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you sped up my point of having to get sober because I think I drank too much on those Thursday nights. But man, what a great time. And Tila, the girl that works with me at the salon, was saying that she, I guess it, Friday night they had Women's Day. Celebration of the Woman.
Yeah. Women's International Day last
Friday.
Yeah,
Women's International Day on Friday. And they had a big thing at the Rudder. Did Michelle go?
No.
So Tila went, and she said it was a blast, but she was talking about there was a band that was playing that was just awesome. And a female singer. I don't know who the band was.
Interesting.
So, you know, maybe if you dive deep into our local music scene, maybe you can start finding out about some of these groups.
Yeah, I'm much like you. You know, back in the day, you know, Love Seed was one of the bands that at the Rudder we would all go see, and you know, there were some of the other local bands, the Mr. Green Jeans,
yep.
And all those guys. But you know, you now I'm married, have kids. I have really no idea what's going on with the local scene.
Do you think that's going to be a challenge for you? Because you do go to bed at 8:30.
Yeah. Just a little bit. Yeah, probably a challenge. But I probably know enough people in the restaurant business that intertwine with those musicians where I can find out what's going on.
Well, I did. The first person I did a podcast with was Bobby Jones. I don't, and I think someone said his name is Bobby Lee Jones.
Okay.
Bobby Jones.
Well, Bobby Jones is the golfer, so he probably wants to be known as Bobby Lee Jones.
Yeah, and he has done, he's been a local artist for, I don't know, a little while. And this is going to be his first year that he's going to do it without having a job. You know, like all in.
Yeah, we talked. Yeah.
And that was pretty cool. I mean, you know, I think that's probably scary, you know. But, you know, I think if you're going to do it, that's what you got to do. I just like when I got into this business, I remember starting in the hair business and I was making $3 and a $3.35 an hour shampooing.
Right.
But, you know, you got to go through it. And
you definitely have to take that leap. You know. You know, and for a musician, it's probably a little more scary because it's not like you know. Yeah, you got to just keep hustling your gigs.
Well, and when I moved here in '94, there was no winter scene.
No, there was none.
There was no winter scene. So
there was nothing.
Now, you know, 25 years, whatever years later, you know, a lot more people live here year-round. And there's a winter scene. There's a music scene during the winter.
Yep.
I know Irish Eyes does a lot of music throughout the winter.
Bethany Blues, Bethany Irish Blues. Eyes. Yeah. So there's definitely more people
Lefties.
Playing. Lefties, yeah.
Lefties has a little stage.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe this winter scene may start picking up. We'll have to figure it out and start looking into it. I'd love to get more local artists in here. Maybe you can even ask someone to come do the podcast.
Well, that would be my goal. You know, it's funny, Weaver, because I think one of the biggest contributors to music, and it's not really local music, but she does get local music involved, is the Freeman Stage, and we kind of talked about that on our phone call. You know, they bring in big acts, but, you know, they'll have some of the local artists open up to warm the crowd up and stuff like that, which is always great. They actually released, which was great, they released the schedule this morning for this summer for the Freeman Stage.
Any notable acts that
yes.
we should mark down? What?
Well,
OAR?
OAR is coming back. I saw them. They were here last summer. Michelle and I went and saw them, so... The funny thing with OAR is I saw them at the Record Theater in Towson when those boys were like 19. It was funny. They were little pups, and now...
I love OAR.
Yeah, so I saw them in Towson in, God bless, that was 97. You know, they were probably... Those guys were... They're from Rockville.
Yeah, Rockville, Maryland.
Yeah, but they played Towson, the college bars a lot, and the Record Theater is this cool little, you know... bar theater in Towson that allow local and regional acts play.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like the 930 Club in D.C., similar.
Cool.
So OAR is coming back, which was... And then the other group that I just had to smile was the Femmes are coming.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and I saw them.
The Femmes, is that the guy that gets in the big inflated ball and bounces across the top of the crowd?
Mm-hmm.
No, you know what? I think that's the Flaming Lips.
No, the Violent Femmes, to say they're... The Violent Femmes have been around since the early 80s.
I remember them as a kid.
I saw them at a club in Fort Lauderdale when I was probably like 23 years old. It was 1993. I just got out of college, moved back down to Florida, and I saw them in Fort Lauderdale, and I can't even remember the name of the place. But wow, what a great show. What a great show.
I'm friends with Michelle, who owns Michelle Freeman.
Right.
And I had coffee with her. We get together once a year. You know, she was dating Matt, and we usually get together right around his anniversary of when he, you know, moved on to a bigger and higher place. And I was like, oh, my God, Michelle, I was going to call you and say, can you get me some tickets? But then I was like, I don't want to do that because, you know, I don't want to.
You don't want to be that guy.
I don't want to be that guy.
No.
But she's like, oh, my God, you should have called me and asked me. But she was telling me that every band that comes has a set of tickets that they get.
Oh, okay.
And that usually, most of the time, they use them all.
Yeah.
But sometimes they don't. And she said if there's tickets, she would absolutely, I mean, I would probably have to pay for them, but, you know, she could get us some.
Right.
But I who I'd love to get is have her on the podcast because...
Well,
she's got a great story.
Yeah, she was one that I thought would be great to talk to. But, you know, just from her involvement with the Freeman Stage and mm-hmm. the foundation and not just the music piece of it, but the arts and the kids and how she really does a lot of things to you know, push arts and music for the local scene here. I think it's pretty amazing. I think she'd be amazing to have on.
If I was to have one complaint about living here is that we don't have... People say, oh, you live next to Philadelphia and New York City and Washington, D.C. Yeah, we do, but it's 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
It's like that place where you just, it's too far to go. If it was maybe an hour, maybe it'd be different. But when you go all the way up to Philly, and I've done it, and I've gone to Madison Square Garden. In fact, we went and saw Pearl Jam in Madison Square Garden and drove home that night.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, we got home at like 5 a.m.
Yeah.
It was brutal.
Well, could you imagine if we didn't have the Freeman stage? I mean, well, we had nothing.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say, is that she's really brought, you know, we have local artists.
Yep.
And then we have big artists that are in, you know, D.C. She's brought, you know, that middle of the ground stage for, and someone told me they're adding seats because.
I love it. I hope not, actually. I love that it's 2,500 people.
I think that someone said. So I was told that they're adding seats because they are just too small for some bands.
Right, that they want to get.
Yeah.
They need to be like 3,500.
They probably need to be about 3,500 to get certain bands.
Yeah. Well, they changed it up last year, and the mid section was like standing room, or the back section. They used to have bleachers, and they took the bleachers away and made it standing room only. The problem was is if you were in ticketed seats in the front, and you wanted to go back to get something to drink or eat, you had to plow through the crowd.
Yeah.
And it was very hard. It was very difficult.
Like, well, that's like any concert.
Well, she didn't, like, they could have easily roped it off and made a path, you know, so you could walk through.
Right.
So, anyways, that was my one complaint.
One path, a walking path. That's money right there, son.
Whatever. I need a walking path.
I love this, you know, I like the story when you and I, I've always been, we're both Pearl Jam fans.
Oh,
we both love Pearl Jam.
Love Pearl Jam.
I joined the Pearl Jam fan club in 1997.
Yeah.
And that was the year, I think it was No Code, and they decided they were going to fight Ticketmaster,
yes,
and they were going to do their own tickets.
That was the big year.
And I was like, oh, great. So that was the beginning of my Pearl Jam fan club, and that year I actually got tickets to the fan club, saw them at Meriwether Post. And I don't know if you've ever been to Meriwether Post, but...
Saw Morrissey there.
We parked, I don't know where we parked, way in the back.
Yeah.
And since Pearl Jam was running the show, I don't know if security was
as
up to par as it was supposed to be. But when we got out, I was like, you know, like a song or two left. I'm like, let's go, let's beat the crowd. We got to the car, and every path, every nook and cranny was stuffed with the car. Like, at some point, they said, just park wherever. So, not only did we not get out of there early, but we had to sit until almost, like, every car left the parking lot.
Wow.
And what a nightmare that was.
Damn,
but,
Pearl Jam.
You know, however many years later, I got tickets to go see Pearl Jam, and I asked you if you wanted to go with me. And so, the way the Pearl Jam, I don't know, I guess, I'm not sure. That's the only fan club I'm a member of. But I know that... you had a number. You were issued a number, mm-hmm, kind of like Delaware and their license plate. The lower the number, the better tickets that you were able to get.
Right.
And I had a low number. Not as low as a lot of people, but from 97, it was pretty low. So we got tickets. We got pit passes. We got...
Right.
So we drove up to Philly. We saw them in Philly, right? At the Spectrum.
We saw them in Philly at the Comcast Center.
Yeah, it was Comcast, so they had taken down Spectrum. And... we got in a little line for the fan club.
Two
hours in line, sitting there with the rest of the knuckleheads. And
it's interesting people watching.
Yeah. And we get our tickets, and we run in, and we're on the front row. I mean, we're one row back.
We were really close.
Yeah, we're really close. And anybody that's down low in the front row are low-number Pearl Jam fan club members.
Right.
Because you just don't get those tickets.
Well, if you remember, we ended up standing next to the guy that travels around and just follows the tour.
Well, I think we were surrounded by those people. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I remember we're talking to somebody. One guy's like, yeah, this is my 70th show. And one guy's like, this is my 50th show.
Yeah.
And they look at Dan and goes, hey, it's my first show.
And
they're like, what are you doing down here? And
stood like that.
Yeah, it was funny. But what a great show that was.
It was an awesome show.
Right there.
Yeah, that was an awesome show. as far as, you know, I've been to a lot of shows, but top shows is that one and the Killers. Just unbelievable energy. I saw the Chili Peppers there a year later with Michelle. And I love the Chili Peppers.
In Philly?
In Philly at Comcast Center. Very unimpressed, I got to tell you. They maybe we caught them on a bad night, but it was just, they just went out there, did their number, got off the stage.
Yeah.
Didn't really talk much, which I was shocked. You know, like, I'm expecting Flea and Kiedis to just put on this, you know, amazing show. And I was, the songs, they sounded great. The songs were great. No energy, though.
No energy.
Not like
going through the motions.
Going through the motions, just collecting a check. So I was very disappointed in that.
I'm always, like, when we saw Pearl Jam, I'm just always amazed, especially with a guy like an Eddie Vedder, who, you know, if I tried to sing one song in a karaoke version of a Pearl Jam song, I'd blow out my voice.
Yeah.
And then we watched him, and they, not only did they not have an opening act, they played for 3 hours.
Yeah. They wore me out.
Yeah, I think we left early.
We left. I think they had a song left. We just to get out of there.
Just to get out of there. But God, I was like, how does this guy do it?
I don't know. Brandon Flowers is the one that I could not believe the energy that guy brings to every show.
Yeah, we saw them at Firefly.
We saw them at the Borgata, a small venue.
In Jersey.
In Jersey, standing room, only 20, maybe 2,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, really small stage, small room, and it was nonstop energy. Like, everyone in that room was sweating by the time it was over.
I told you that, I guess this was maybe 5 years ago, maybe it's been now, but you and I both love the Killers. I
mean, huge.
Yeah, and the Killer, this is when the Killers were kind of touring. They were finishing up. I don't even know what they were doing. I know they were going to play the iHeartRadio concert in Vegas.
Yep.
And I'm like, I want to see the Killers. I'm going to go see the Killers in concert. So I go online and I'm looking. They have like two shows. One is iHeart, and I don't know the other one. But the tickets were $2,000 a piece.
Right.
And I'm like,
maybe I'm
not going to see the Killers. And then I remember that Brandon Flowers was doing, had done his solo album.
Yep.
So I go, well, let's see if he's touring. Sure enough, he's playing at this place called the Rainbow Theater on Route 66, Central Avenue.
I'm still so jealous that you went to that.
Downtown Albuquerque.
The Desired Effect tour.
Desired Effect.
And, you know, God knows if he'll ever do another solo gig like that.
I think he probably will.
I hope so. God, I hope so.
But and I'm from Albuquerque, so we flew to Albuquerque and we stayed at this little renovated KOA, you know, the ones that have, the high pointy roof, and then, you know, that's the office, and then the little pool, and then the long, I guess that's a motel, because all the doors are on the outside.
Yes, that is correct.
We go down there, we get a room at this place, and we walk to the Rainbow Theater.
That's awesome.
It's like two blocks away, and we saw Brandon Flowers in this rundown room. I mean, with the stage. I mean, literally. And the only thing it would remind me of is when I used to go to these old shows when I was growing up in Albuquerque. Just, there's so much history and so much, you know, it's an old city. So, but we were like 50 feet away and there was probably 300 people. I don't even know why there wasn't very many people. It almost made me feel like nobody liked Brandon Flowers. But he was amazing. And he ended up playing a lot of Killer songs.
Right.
And, yeah, so we scored. I think the tickets were like $70.
Yeah, I remember when seeing some of those pictures, I was so jealous. I was like, could not believe.
And we were sitting outside eating with some friends of mine that I had grown up with, and it had just rained, and I looked over, and we decided to eat right across the street, you know, down to the left. So I'm sitting outside eating. The rain had just stopped, and I look over it, and I can see the Rainbow Theater. And I look over it, and there's a rainbow coming right into the ceiling of the Rainbow Theater. And I took that picture and then had it blown up and mailed it to him and told him thank you for the great show. I never heard anything back from him, but that was also a time maybe they might have been like, I don't know what this is, and tossed it. But it was a great, great picture, and I hope they got it.
That's awesome. That's absolutely awesome.
One of my problems is I grew up, like I just mentioned, in Albuquerque. And in Albuquerque, Albuquerque was a main stop for all the bands.
Okay.
So, you know, it was like Dallas, Albuquerque, mm-hmm. Phoenix, San Diego. So, and the way the city's kind of laid out, it's all kind of centralized around the state fairgrounds.
Okay.
And that's where all the bands came into the fairgrounds. So, I mean, every band that came through, we saw them. And I remember, tickets were like $15, you know.
Yeah.
Judas Priest, all the DL, Black Sabbath, all those bands growing up. So moving here was a little bit of a, letdown. I won't even say letdown, because I didn't move here for the music. But, over time, I wish there was more bands I could see.
That kind of was what the basis for our conversation on the phone and what we've talked about is there's never really been, I'm sure if anyone's actually listened to this, would call us and say you're crazy, but I don't remember other than Love Seed or Mr. Green Jeans, maybe a handful, small handful of bands. There's not really a local music scene here. It's not like we're an up and coming scene, and there never really has been. I agree with you though. At least now we're become that. Fortunately or unfortunately, we're more of a year round area. We are seeing more music come through here, but I wasn't fortunate growing up. I didn't have access to live music in West Virginia. Nobody came to West Virginia. Yeah, unless it was a country act, Hank Williams Jr. But I didn't get exposure to music until I was in college and actually started traveling as I got older. So. I agree with you, though. I do love that Michelle has brought the Freeman stage to our area. I think it is an amazing, venue to at least bring, decent acts. You're getting OAR and you're getting the Violent Femmes and some of the, other people that are coming.
What were some of the other bands coming?
Oh, I can't remember. I just saw the Violent Femmes and OAR and got excited.
I think Pat Benatar's played there.
Yeah, I mean
Cyndi Lauper.
Oh shoot, there was another classic act that's coming. 70s,
Creedence,
70s act that I was like, oh, I wouldn't mind seeing that. But I looked at it really quick before I came because they just
well their problem. It's not their problem. It's my problem is that they sell out very quickly.
Oh, you've got to be ready.
I mean, it's like an event.
Yeah, I go on the second they go on sale. And usually I get decent tickets. I'm usually, Michelle and I, because I'm trying to think, we've gone to 4 or 5 shows there.
How's the parking?
It's easy.
Yeah. Oh, fine.
It's easy in, easy out.
I've only been there once, and that was for Matt's funeral.
Oh, okay.
His celebration of life.
No, that's why I love the venue. If they add people, it kind of complicates it. Because right now it's perfect at 20. I think it's 2,500 roughly. It's a perfect number. Like, it's awesome. I absolutely love it.
We'll have to reach out to Michelle and see if she'll come to the podcast.
Yeah, she'd be great.
She is great. Well, she has a great story. I guess I can say she's sober. I don't know. I guess I can say that. But that's how, we've become friends over the years through that.
Right.
And through my good friend Matt, who she dated. And she's been around I've known her ever since I've really been sober.
Right.
She lived more down here at the time. And then, ended up getting married and, has a whole great story. But she's a super, super awesome person.
Yeah. I don't know her at all. I only know of her through you and obviously of her when I go to the events and she speaks. I just know visiting the foundation, the website, what she has done and her foundation and family has done for this area is just phenomenal and amazing. Just the free events they do for kids in the summertime, I think, is probably more amazing than the musical acts they bring. They do so many cool things for the kids.
Yeah.
And we've gone down there a few times, and it's great. The kids have a good time.
I like how they do stuff for kids, and it doesn't have an ulterior motive. I feel like there's a lot of stuff around here especially with some local businesses that I'm not going to mention, but, you know, they build these things for the kids and it's great, but my God, they just, it's all advertising.
Yeah.
I just get, it gets,
yeah,
I get tired of it.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. Yeah.
These kids need to grow up so they can do adult things. Well, and that's the other thing, you know, I don't know if I could afford, you know, my son David, he's all, he loves him some music. I took him to Firefly. We're going to go this year because it's a thing we do now. The first year I took him.
I don't like the lineup this year.
We're going to see.
And you can't just do a one-day ticket.
Yeah, we do.
Can you do a one-day ticket again?
That's all we've ever done.
Okay.
We buy the VIP tickets.
All right. Well, there is one day that doesn't look too bad. I can't remember what day it is.
But we're going to see. We want to see. He wants to see Panic at the Disco.
Yeah.
So that's the night we're going to go.
Okay.
But there's a lot of great bands up there this year. I mean, yeah, the big acts are a little not that great, but like AJR is playing. I don't know if you're familiar
no
with
idea.
Them.
No idea.
So these are all bands I learned about from David.
Oh, okay.
And it's funny because I think, you know, I have my music world.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so their thing is they like to get my phone and play music while we're in the car, their music.
Right.
And so I have to listen to this. The latest thing they've been playing is a band called Half-Life. And it's good.
No, Ella, you know, I'm going through the same thing because mm-hmm. Ella brings music to me. And I'm like, I have no idea. And I listen to it and I'm like, wow, that's really good.
Yeah.
I like it. Oh my God. Like there's a few girls, you know, solos, and not Ariana Grande, like real super talented, girls that I've never heard of. And she brings them to me and I'll listen. I'm like, wow, that's good.
Girl power.
But, yeah, listen to Amy Shark.
I know you told me.
You would
that.
Think I'm a promoter or something.
All right, I'm going to put it.
She's an ostrich. Amazing. Amy Shark.
I've had to start a...
And you want to know how I heard of that? I was listening to an interview with Chris Carrabo, the lead singer of Dashboard, and he was talking about new artists that he liked. And if I'm like, if he likes it, I've got to listen to it. And I listened to it, and it was pretty good. So
I started a new file in my notes on my phone because I am, unfortunately, my memory is just terrible. And I'm trying to write things down as I hear them, so that I hear a lot of, you know, even at work, people say, oh my God, you got to do this, or oh my gosh, you got to listen to this. And I go, yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. And then they're gone. I'm like, what was that?
I'm the same way.
It's so bad.
Yeah. You get to a certain point where you just start forgetting
everything. Is that Alzheimer's? What's going
to
happen?
No. You know, it used to be garbage in, garbage out. And unfortunately, I think the garbage out just doesn't go out anymore. You're just, you know.
Well, I am selective about what I attempt to remember. You know, kids will be like, oh, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And I'll go, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and just put that in the wastebasket.
Yeah.
But, well, so the back to, you know, so we went to Firefly the first year because 21 Pilots was playing.
Yeah.
And so we go, and we did not buy VIP tickets. We just bought, you know, regular tickets.
Yeah, that's smelly.
Yeah, well, so we got, we got there, and I forget the band that we first initially watched, but then Weezer came on.
Oh, I love Weezer.
Oh, dude, what
they're so good.
How awesome were they? And, you know, it's like, oh, Weezer. Yeah, I liked Weezer. Every song, you're like, oh, I love this song.
Yeah.
And David was like, you know, he
Buddy
was digging
Holly, Beverly Hills.
Yeah, he was digging it.
Ripping through the hits.
But that was David's first experience with pot smoke.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's smelly.
And he was in, I forget what grade, he was, you know, I'm not going to say how young he was, but he was very anti-anything smoke. Like, he's the kid
right there with him.
If someone's smoking a cigarette and he'll walk by and he puts his hands over his nose and face and he does that gas mask, you know. And I'm like, David, stop doing that. You know, you make people feel bad. And so... He was dealing with cigarette smoke, pot smoke. At one point, after Weezer, we're waiting for 21 Pilots, and we had worked our way up pretty close.
Yeah.
And it was just too much, so we had to get out of there. And he was, like, almost laying on the ground. And he's like, I want to go. And
good for him, though. I'm the same way. I can't stand it.
I go, David, you know, we're this far. And then we finally, you know, 21 Pilots came on, and he loves that band. So
they're awesome.
And he just had the best time. And he's like, so I'm so glad we didn't leave. And I was like, well, there's no chance I'm leaving, really. This is casualties of war kind of stuff. You got to deal with
it. Suck it up.
So we went again last year, and I bought the VIP tickets for the first time. And it was a big, I think they were probably $100 more a piece.
It's worth it.
It was worth it because you had the general population area, and then on every stage on the left or the right side, there was this small strip of area that was for the VIP.
Yep.
And, you know, there was a lot of people, but it was nowhere near amount of people.
I have not experienced it. Michelle is gone, but everyone I've spoken to that's done regular tickets and VIP, they're like, oh, nope. No questions. VIP. You have to get VIP is the way to go.
It was awesome. So we're going to go again this year. It's our new thing. And he wants to see Panic at the Disco. So I guess the whole point was that I started listening to Panic at the Disco, and
I like them.
They're good.
Yeah.
That guy's a great singer.
He's a really good singer. He's got a strong voice. I started listening to them and probably 21 Pilots a couple years ago.
Well, he does a great version of Bohemian Rhapsody.
Mm-hmm.
And he's probably like one of the only few people that can really do a great version of it.
Yeah.
And so I'm actually excited to hopefully they'll do Bohemian Rhapsody at the show. I think that'd be really cool.
Yeah.
I saw there was, and you may have even seen it, there was a video of, it was basically like a GoPro set up behind the drummer for Green Day. And it was at a festival.
Okay.
Have you seen this video where the...
Trey Cool.
So they're, you know, they're setting up the stage and the public announcement speakers are playing music. You know, like when you're at a concert, they're always kind of playing music in between the shows. And Bohemian Rhapsody came on. And this crowd, I mean, there must have been 100,000 people. I mean, I don't even know.
It was a festival. Okay.
It was a festival. It was like Firefly, but bigger.
Right.
You know, where they have the towers and then another tower and then light. So, but this crowd starts singing along with the radio or with the, you know, the public announcement PA. And it was crazy because they're all singing it together. So what I'm hoping for is to go see Panic at the Disco and they sing Bohemian Rhapsody and we all sing along. And
well, you
it's
think
an amazing moment.
The timing that they would, you know, with the movie coming out this year and just it's a big song again.
Did you see the movie?
I did not. I do want to see it, but it wasn't one of those, you know.
It was a good movie. I was a huge Queen fan.
I was not.
I loved Queen.
I was not a huge Queen fan.
Actually, I shouldn't even say I was a huge Queen fan. I got into Queen when, I think we've always all loved Bohemian. I mean, we all love the hits, right?
Yeah.
You love the hits.
Yeah.
But
I mean, my relation to Queen is I know it's funny, is sports, and it's Pittsburgh, and We Are the Champions, and Another One Bites the Dust. I mean, it was like the Steelers and Pirates, and that was my connection with Queen. And it's funny, because I thought of them as a sports band, kind of.
Right.
You know, because I was 70, that was the late 70s, 7, 8, 9 years old. But I never really, that was not a band I ever really got into. I mean, I think we all listened to Queen.
Yeah, and I should change that because I wasn't having any Queen posters on my wall.
Right.
I liked Queen, and when they came out with an album right when he was dying, and I'll have to remember the name, but, and I was out in San Diego and I started kind of getting back into Queen, and, yeah, I loved Queen, and their last album that they did was amazing.
Yeah.
And so when I saw the movie, I think I was more in shock just that a guy could pull that off and be a Freddie Mercury, but it wasn't.
I heard he was good, and, you know, I'm taking this from people that saw it and probably took it a little harder. You know, just I guess according to hardcore Queen fans, it wasn't accurate. There was many things that were inaccurate of reality versus movie script, which, you know, get over it. Whatever it is, what it is, it's a movie.
Well, the only thing he really did, besides being an amazing singer, was that show at Live Aid.
Right.
I mean, and that the show was really spectacular just by the amount of people.
But as far as the performance, I heard Rami Malek was amazing.
He was.
I heard he did a great job. You know, anyone to bang on him for lip syncing, come on. There's no one who could pull those, singing those lyrics off.
Well, and there was actually a guy that sang the music.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I saw a thing about that. There was a guy that actually sang the music. It wasn't just a past recording of Freddie Mercury.
So they re-recorded it. Okay. Yeah. I didn't know that. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So it was good. It was funny because I really liked A Star Is Born. They all came out around the same time.
Well, yeah, we chose which one we wanted to see, and I wanted to see A Star Is Born.
Yeah, and what did you think of that?
Oh, well, amazing. Absolutely amazing. And we've had this conversation. My expectations were Gaga, or exactly what she delivered. I knew she would be good because she's always been a performer.
Mm-hmm.
Bradley Cooper is the one that blew me away.
Yeah.
Completely blew me away. Just how he transformed himself, the music piece of it, it's just to sit there and learn how to play a guitar and learn and train his vocal cords to go a deeper octave. Just blew me away.
I thought that, when they announced all the awards and stuff and they said that he hadn't been chosen for director, up for the director award, I was like, I don't understand. So then when we saw the movie,
right,
I was like, Jesus, that was amazing directing. I mean, when I watched the movie, and there's especially some specific parts, but the one where she's singing in the bar, I felt like we were all meeting each other for the first time. Like, they were meeting, I was watching, so we were all kind of doing it together.
He did a lot of little things in the movie that, that experienced directors don't do, and to bring a sense of, not to get too deep, but to bring a sense of reality. If you remember when they were in the bar and he kept acting, he was like, I can't hear you. I mean, it kind of brought a sense of, like, you almost felt like it was real, like they really were in a bar because he couldn't hear.
Right.
And,
Well, and at one point when it was over, he wiped a tear out of his eye. Like,
yeah.
I think that was really a tear. I think he was really.
I think beyond the direction that Bradley gave, it was really the connection between Gaga and Bradley. They just connected.
I saw, after the movie and before the Oscars, and everybody was like, they're in love. And, the movie made you feel like that. They were really in love. And I think a lot of people wanted that to be the case. And, they did the performance on the Oscars and, everyone's like,
performance in Vegas.
Yeah. And people are like, how dare Lady Gaga stare at him like that with his girlfriend?
It's a performance.
Yeah. And then later I watched an interview with her and she goes, it was all performance.
Exactly.
The people wanted us to be in love, so we acted like we were in love. That's what they wanted, so that's what we gave them. And I was like,
yeah.
Okay, I get it.
I think there's probably some feelings there, but, that was part of the role, and whatever they did, they connected and they pulled it off amazingly.
I never saw any of the other ones.
No, I haven't either, and I've seen clips of the Kris Kristofferson and Barbara Streisand, and the clips I saw were good, but I don't know if I'd have to watch the whole movie.
Well, they rewrote all the music, so that was all new music.
The music was all new. There was some of the pieces of the movie interconnected, but a lot of it didn't.
Right.
There was a few lines they took. I'm going blank right now, but there was a few throwaway lines that they took from the original that they used in the new one.
Well, I wonder if, because I know in this movie it was a lot of focus on her nose, and I wonder if that was the same kind of focus on Barbara Streisand, because she did have a big nose.
Well, there was a connection there.
Like, did they do that, when she takes her finger and goes over her nose? Did Barbara Streisand do that in that other movie?
No, she didn't. But obviously there's a connection between Streisand and Gaga as far as how they look.
Right.
And their command, their presence on stage. I mean, Streisand is just amazing on stage.
Well, and I think, because I remember when that movie came out, I was a little kid.
Yeah.
And I think at that time, Kris Kristofferson was a big,
he was
big
huge.
Time.
He was huge.
Yeah, I mean, he was a stud. He was like Bradley Cooper.
Yeah.
And Barbara Streisand was a big deal too at the time. So
Streisand was, the biggest, they were probably the two biggest stars.
The biggest stars at the time, right. I wasn't a big fan of theirs, but I was also a little kid.
We were little kids. So we were 7 and 8 years old. So what would we know?
So you don't go to a lot of movies.
We don't. I mean, I love going? I love going to movies, but we don't go to a lot. I mean, in all honesty, it's got to be a really good movie for me to want to go to a movie and see it.
Well, in our place in life with kids, I mean, if there's a movie going to be seen, it's probably chosen by the kids.
I was going to say, it's going to be Lego Movie too.
I got to go suffer through it.
I would say for the most part, the last 12 years of my life has been kid movies. So
there's actually some pretty good kid movies. Moana was good.
Wreck-It Ralph was awesome. Moana was awesome. Frozen was awesome. Cars, going back, that was awesome. So
Christine told me that they're coming out with a new Frozen.
Oh, wow.
In November.
Oh, good Lord. We're going to see that.
So get your wallets ready for... Well, I like that our kids are out of that, but...
Yeah, I was going to say, well, Colin's not, but Ella is kind of getting into the realm of more mature movies. So
how old is Ella?
Ella's 12.
So David's 13. So they're...
Right. They're kind of in the same
place. It's an interesting age.
Yeah, age of discovery.
I try, it's weird. It's weird trying to be a dad to a 13-year-old boy, in this time, and especially when, for a long time I've been a single dad, and David and I and Sam, we're tight, we're close, and to see, life kind of pull them away. And them not to be as interested in what their father is up to.
I will eventually get there. With Ella, obviously being a girl, it's a lot different.
Yeah.
She's pulling away for whole different reasons. She needs to talk to mom about stuff.
Right.
And thank God, I don't want to talk about that.
You're all right, Dan.
Yeah.
You
so
can do it.
No, I can't really.
I can't do it.
No, don't want to. But yeah, it's an interesting age. The thing is we were that age once too, and I always try to look back on and I remember 6th, 7th, 8th grade. Man, those are some of the toughest years. God, those are some of the toughest years. I don't care if who you are, whether you're the kid, the school nerd or the school athlete. They're the toughest years, regardless.
Do you think we take our thoughts and memories of those years and apply them to current situations?
It all depends how deep those scars go. It's true.
Well, I mean, people say, "Oh, this, social media. It's it's so hard on these kids these days." Or is it hard on us to think about what it would have been like back in the day? But our kids have kind of evolved through all this.
You're hitting the nail on the head. I mean, they're growing up with this.
Yeah, they're growing up with
this. This is their life.
Right.
I mean, for us, it's shocking. It's shock and awe because we're like, holy crap. Could you imagine if we, so for us, it's different, how we look at it.
Right.
They're growing up with it. Like, this is just regular life for them. For us, it's like, oh my God, this is crazy.
Right. And our poor children, how can they handle all this?
They can handle
social pressure.
Yeah, they're fine. They're fine. They've been dealing with it since day one.
Well, David told me he's on Twitter, and I'm like, really? You're on Twitter? Because I'm not even on Twitter.
I'm not either. I
can't.
I don't know anything about Twitter, other than that's usually what, I guess, pro athletes use.
Well, it's a place that you can, it's a soapbox, really. You stand up and say what you want to say, and...
Yeah.
I just never got into it.
No, I don't do. I mean, we've had the social media talk. I don't do a lot.
I don't do it.
I do a couple times a month, and it's always the kids.
Yep.
And that's what we, that's what we do.
Are you working today? You off?
I'm working. Shh.
Shh.
I'm working.
I'm like, Dan, come on, let's do a podcast.
I'm working.
We got to get into, I like, and we both, we've already said that we don't, I haven't looked to see if anybody's listened to any of our podcasts, but.
Probably not.
But one thing I know about anything like that is you have to try to be consistent. If we're going to do one once a week or if I want to try to do one every day, which I don't want to do. But I also thought about, you know, what about filming it? Setting up cameras.
You can. You know.
It's just another step of things to do, though.
Yeah, I think first it would be nice if people are listening.
Yeah.
You know. And then do they want to see our faces? Probably not.
Yeah, no, probably not.
Yeah.
But, you know, we could post it on YouTube.
Oh, well, there we go. A star is born.
And then we can sing. I know you sing. I've always had karaoke machines, and you've sang karaoke at my house. So I know you're a singer.
Did I? Are you sure about that?
Sing some Pearl Jam.
Lone.
Yep. Yeah. That's a song I think you sing.
That's the only one I can sing.
I love singing.
I mean, it's kind of, you know, in the early Eddie Vedder days, it's kind of easy.
Yeah.
You're just a lovely man, just a talking like this.
Keep it down, roll.
Yeah.
But then he actually started being a singer.
Then he grew as a singer, and I can't hit some of those notes.
We still do karaoke at the house. I love karaoke.
I'm trying to remember. Wasn't it SNL? Someone made fun of Vedder, of how he
sang. Yeah, it was Sandberg.
Was it Sandberg?
Yeah, and he did it on the news. He's like, you know, like, yeah. Just mumbled it out and
was it Sandler or Sandberg?
Sandler.
Yeah, Adam Sandler. That's what Sandler. I thought.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not a big. I love SNL, but I thought they lost me a few seasons ago.
No, I have not watched in years, but yeah. I thought Sandler made fun of
that. I used to love Saturday Night Live because Saturday Night Live would have some great bands on. I remember.
I that's what I watched for. And in all honesty, I mean, the comedy's great, but I watched to see who the music act.
I used to set up my VCR before I went out to tape Cops and Saturday Night Live.
And I used to sneak every night and watch Letterman for the musical act. I wanted to see who was playing.
Right. So, yeah, exactly.
And I mean, obviously, I thought Letterman was great, and I always wanted to see. I could care less about the guests.
Right.
I just wanted to see who the music act was.
Well, those were good times on Saturday Night Live. I used to love the Saturday Night Live back then. Yeah. But I remember when Pearl Jam played the first time on there, I was like, oh, my God. Or I remember I saw Smashing Pumpkins play the first time on there, and I was like, holy cow, these guys are good.
Yeah.
So that's used to be a great place to watch bands. I think I'm just not in touch with the bands anymore. I at some point in my age, I just stopped taking applications for new bands and just...
That was 10 years ago.
Yeah, I just live in my old...
And well, the last real band I brought in was The Killers. And, now I'm just kind of, test driving, Imagine Dragons. And I'm test driving...
Have you heard the new Imagine Dragons album?
Yeah, and I like it. I'm not going to use the love word, but I like Imagine Dragons. I think they're super talented.
I like Imagine Dragons. I love their new album. In fact, I probably, out of like between the number of tracks and the actual number of tracks that I like, it's one of those. That their new album is very good.
But in the last 10 years, I can't, the last group I really brought into my life that is one of my own is The Killers. And since then, you've got groups, like Imagine Dragons, The Script. That's a group that I really love. I think they, One Republic, another group I thought really did some good stuff. And then, Mumford and Sons.
But they don't last, Imagine Dragons is still around, but
I don't know what happened. Those are groups
One
Republic, they came out with some stuff and they disappeared. I'm like, I couldn't understand that they were so talented, so good.
Yeah.
The Script, same thing. My God, they put out some good music.
It's a tough business, not only are you in a band with four or five or whatever many people trying to all stay happy, but, you're constantly trying to stay current.
I'll be the first to say that I don't keep up. Remember back in the day, release day was like a big deal, album release day, and that doesn't exist anymore. I mean, that's how we knew when new albums were hitting. Now it's like, I don't even know unless Spotify tells me that this artist has a new album or something.
Well, now they'll release a song.
Yeah.
Like Mumford and Sons, they do that. They release a song, then another song, and then another song, and then the album.
So I'm completely disconnected because I'm still back in the old days when they had album releases. And learning new music is really hard. So it is. I mean, I'm getting all my new music from Ella.
Yeah, well, thank God for the kids because they bring a new.
And I will say, most of the stuff she brings, I like. I'm like, that's good.
Yeah.
Wouldn't say I love it, but I like it.
a lot of the music that David brings me, I like it, but it all, a lot of it sounds like it's been recorded in their garage. Like it's this...
It's that muffled sound.
Well, no, it sounds great. But and nowadays, you can sit down. I mean, you know, we are recording this on GarageBand. You can, if you know what you're doing, you can create music,
yeah.
Good music, on GarageBand.
We could probably do it in this room right here.
In the podcast studios.
All right,
hey. That was long. That was a good chat.
That was a good chat. We were all over the place as usual.
No, it had a path.
Did it?
We didn't jump off the path. It was okay. Just a path down many things.
So, yeah, maybe we'll try to get some quality guests lined up for the season.
Who's your first guest we're bringing in?
I don't know. I think it needs to, you know, obviously we spent a lot of time talking about music, so I think we need to get Michelle Freeman.
I'll send her a text and see if she'll come on.
I think she'd be great to talk to. She's got a great story to tell of, you know, her path, and she can go in a lot of different directions.
So. Oh, no. And, you know, the idea behind doing these is really, yeah, we want to talk to Michelle about music, but, you know, what's her journey? What brought her here? She's got a huge story.
That's what I mean. She could be a three-part.
You know, she's part owner of the Capitals.
I did not know that.
Hockey. And, you know... It's very traditional who gets, you know, they won the cup, obviously, and it's very traditional who gets to touch the cup. Like, you can't touch the cup unless you're a member of the team or one of the, you know, part of the ownership. And she was telling me that some guy who came up to touch the cup, and this one of the big players is like, hey, can't touch the cup.
You know? Yeah.
But she was allowed. In fact, she posted some pictures on the plane back with the cup.
And that is funny.
Yeah, so that was... That was kind of a, you know.
That's a big deal.
We'll have to see if she'll talk about it.
Well, maybe she'll bring the cup.
Can we touch the cup? She's going to show up with her, the cup, and the giant forward.
Well, maybe, you know.
An enforcer.
I was going to say, Ovechkin stole the cup for about 2 weeks and took it with him.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he traveled everywhere.
You're a big hockey fan, right?
No, not at all. Oh. No, nothing about hockey, but
you knew that.
I'm a sports nut, and I do know what's going on in sports.
You're a lot like me. I love to watch and listen to all things about sports, but when it comes to watching the sports, I'm not as big of a fan.
Nah, my big sport, and this is crazy because obviously I'm 5'5" and I wrestled, but my favorite sport is the NBA. It's basketball.
It is?
Yeah. That's the sport I follow. And then behind that would be the NFL and then everything West Virginia University.
Well, we'll have to talk about sports next
but,
time.
Yeah, I can talk a lot about sports. Mm-hmm. Baseball, like most Americans, has fallen off. I grew up playing ball. I romanticized about baseball as a kid and growing up. And as an adult, it kind of has faded away.
Well, we'll get together next time and we'll talk about sports.
We'll do sports next time.
Dan, thanks for doing this.
All right, thanks, Tom.
All right, buddy. Have a good day.
All right, bye.
Bye.